One of my favorite stories on prayer is actually in the book of John, John chapter 2. It's not a story that is normally thought of as a story on prayer, but it's actually one of my favorites, one that I love to share. And that's the story of the wedding at Cana. It's a well-known story about how Jesus and his disciples go to a wedding, and there they participate in an important occasion in the community, and the wine runs out. And it's a bit of a crisis, and eventually Jesus changes the water there into wine. But I want to point out some things that are very significant this morning. First of all, that's probably one of the most famous weddings in all of history. It's very interesting. One of the most famous weddings in history. We don't know the name of the bride and the groom, but we do know of the wedding. And this is the reason. When they put the guest list together, they invited Jesus to come to the wedding. And it's because Jesus came to the wedding that he was known. That was the first great blessing of that wedding. And I'd like to suggest that had Jesus not been there that day, and it goes without saying, of course, that no miracle could have taken place. And so the blessing of that day was dependent upon Jesus being there. And in applying it to our day, this first thought, unless we invite Jesus every day to be a part of our lives, there are miracles that cannot take place. Ellen White says in the book Great Controversy, she says, it is God's plan to grant in answer to the prayer of faith that which he would not grant if we did not ask. And she suggests, and there are numerous spots that say it, similar to that thing, and you also find the same in the writings of Andrew Murray and E.M. Bounds and other people, that there are blessings that God gives in answer to prayer but will not give. And I think that many of us are perhaps going without blessings because we find ourselves so busy we don't take the time to pray. And therefore we find ourselves working very inefficiently and not receiving what God is willing and able to do. So the first blessing was the fact that Jesus was invited there. The second blessing in the wedding was the fact that they ran out of wine. We don't often think of that as the second great blessing that day. But had there been no difficulty, there would have been no miracle. We can imagine that as they were making the very careful preparations for that day, they carefully went through the guest list. They went through, who was going to speak, where they were going to be, what they were going to wear, what they were going to eat. And every provision had been made that there would be no error, because this was an event that everyone of the village was going to come out to. And in spite of all of their best efforts, eventually, the people that were serving noticed that the wine was running out, and we can imagine they were whispering between themselves, and then it ran out. But instead of that being a disaster, that was actually a blessing. And if you study the Bible, what you find is often God's greatest blessings get wrapped in what F.B. Meyer, a famous Baptist preacher, said here in England, said their greatest blessings are delivered in rough packing cases. They don't look that way on the outside, but they are on the inside. And in the Bible, there's numerous verses from, in all things God is able to work for good, that we should rejoice always. Daniel was giving thanks, as was his custom. Why? Because he had learned that disasters often are the prequel to blessings. And if you study the book of Daniel, every huge blessing in the book of Daniel began with a disaster. We forget about that, but that is true. And so the second great blessing that day was that there was a difficulty. And I'd like to suggest that instead of getting discouraged when difficulties come, we should be thanking God. I think the most important words, the two most important words in the English language for a Christian are yes and thank you. Yes, Lord, you've allowed this to happen. Thank you somehow. This is for my good. So that was the second blessing that day. The third thing that happens is Mary, the mother of Jesus, goes to him and says they have no wine. She made a simple request. It was in person, but it was in effect a prayer. Today we talk to Jesus, to God. And Mary talked to Jesus that day and explained to him very simply that there was a need because there was no wine that day. The wine had run out. And we learned something about prayer there in that she didn't know what to do. And oftentimes we think that perhaps we need to have a solution, but sometimes it's just telling God what the problem is. That's a complete prayer. Lord, I have no idea what to do, but this is the problem. We need to open our hearts and tell God what the issue is. And God will often come up with a solution. Another famous Britisher was George Mueller, you know, who had the orphanages over in Bristol. And he wrote about the fact that, you know, when we lay our burdens on God, we know that we've really laid them on God when we have a light heart. He says, until you've truly, you know, given them to God and you have a light heart, you have not yet given your burdens away. But he adds something very interesting. He says that if you don't give your burdens to God, God will be required to give you more burdens to teach you to give them away to God. And I think that's true. That's why sometimes when it rains, it begins pouring, because we're slow learners. We don't want to learn to really put our burdens on God. And so she went and she just simply said, they have no wine. And Jesus made an interesting response there. Jesus said, woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. That's an interesting response. It wasn't a disrespectful response. And it wasn't a response that suggested, because we know the story, that he was unwilling to do the miracle. Please note that. He says, you know, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour's not yet come. Why do you suppose Jesus gave that answer? Why do you suppose he gave that answer that day? Speaks reams to why we don't always get answers to prayer. Imagine with me, I'll give you the answer, that was the most important event in the village. Perhaps it was, you know, a village that they frequented, people knew them well, or a village where there were people around, many people coming. She knew that Jesus was the Messiah, but no one else knew. And perhaps in her own thinking, and we get the idea from reading further, she was thinking to herself, what better occasion for Jesus to do a miracle? Here's an opportunity, Jesus, for you to do a miracle so that everyone will know that you're the Messiah. And when Jesus recognized what motivated her, he responded and says, what does your concern, and then you have to fill in the blank as to what that concern is. And I think what I've shared is the concern that he was responding to. He said, with me, my hour has not yet come. It wasn't the time for him to reveal himself as the Messiah. And so he dissuaded her. And I believe when it comes to prayer, sometimes we come to God with less than ideal motives. And God knows what our motives are. Sometimes we want success because we want to succeed for ourselves. You know, in ministry, for a pastor, it's dangerous to say, Lord, bless, because I want this growing church, because I want, you know, this objective to be attained. Going back to George Mueller, he said when he was first a pastor, for the first 3 years or so, he said, I worked very carefully on sermons and did all of those kinds of things, but there was no fruit. And then one day he said, I decided that I would simply be a simple servant and seek just to honor God. And he said, from that time on, there was much fruit. He said, you know, when I chose to make my great motive in ministry was just to honor God and to be obedient to him, he said, then much fruit came. And I think many of us perhaps spend too much time trying to be great instead of just being, you know, seeking to honor God, because that's when the real true fruit comes. Anyway, so she asked with less than ideal motives, and I think when we don't get answers to our prayers, we should do two things. We should first examine our own hearts. What is my motive? Is what I'm asking for something God can answer? Or two, is there something in my life that's preventing an answer? I love the writings of Ellen White. I love the writings of other great Christians. I teach at the seminary in the history of spirituality. So I'm reading lots and lots and lots all the time. And speaking of this, Andrew Murray, in his book, The Christian Secret of a Happy Life, he said, it's easy to conclude that when God doesn't answer our prayers, it must not be God's will. And he says it's a diseased indicator of the church that so many prayers go unanswered because we don't like to go to the trouble of asking God those two questions. One, is my prayer something that you can answer? Or two, is there something in my life that is getting in the way of your answering my prayer? And so that day there was something in her motives that was staying in the way. Well, Mary did something else that was very important. She didn't give up. She did not give up. She assumed that Jesus cared enough, and so she went to the servants, and she basically told them, you know from the story, whatever he tells you, do it. And it explains there that there were there the 6 water pots of stone according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing some 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Those were very large water pots. And Jesus said to them, fill the water pots with water. And it says they filled them up to the brim. Just imagine that in those days when you had to take a bucket and you had to dump a bucket, how many buckets it would have taken to fill 6 water pots full of water. Jesus said, fill those water pots. And it says they filled them all the way up to their brim. And I don't believe from what I've studied and understand that the water was changing to water as they were dumping the water out. It still looked like water. But he said, fill them up to the brim. And so they did. They kept filling them, all 6 water pots. I would have been tempted to say, you know, I'll fill up a little bit, but not 6 water pots. It seems to me like we're wasting our time. They won't want to serve water here. But they were obedient. They were obedient to the point of filling the water pots up to the brim. And I believe sometimes, you know, God calls us to obey him. God calls us to follow him. And it's because we're only willing to partially obey that God is not able to really bless us as fully as he would like. The servants that day, though, they obeyed Jesus completely. They filled the water pots up to their brim. And so they were up to their brim. And then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the feast. He could have said, just draw some out and take it. But he said, no, fill the water pots. He tested them. And often we are tested. And then he said, take it. And the Bible, the tense there suggests that actually while they were walking with the water was changing into wine. Okay, they were carrying a miracle that was taking place. And when they got it there, what did the master say? In verse 9, when the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master called the bridegroom and he said, every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when the guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now. Many think that when they really get serious with God, when they really decide that, you know, there are areas in my life where I've been only filling the water pot up partially, that when they get serious, that life is going to kind of go down to a kind of a boring, you know, no more fun in my life anymore kind of experience. But the master of the feast said something very real there, that if you really want to know true joy, real joy, if you want to know real blessing, follow and obey completely, because that's when God can truly bless you to the nth degree. You know, the story of Solomon that we're studying over in the church, and I want to invite all of you to come. We're actually studying the construction and the dedication of the temple. It's a fascinating study where we're comparing the tabernacle, Solomon's temple, the second temple, and the temple of our hearts. It's really amazing when you begin to compare and draw applications out of it. Solomon was faithful to God, but then he backed away. And the wisdom and the rest and the prosperity that he had at the beginning, it fell away because he thought, you know, he could find greater happiness somehow in the things of this world. That's not true. That's not true. And so at this wedding, when they obeyed and they took this water that Jesus had turned into wine, it was far superior to anything that they could find on their own. What was the first blessing of that wedding, though? That Jesus had been invited. There would have been no miracle without him being there. And so as we close, I would like us to take just a few minutes to maybe pray individually if we don't feel comfortable praying with someone else, or pray with another person and ask God to become a part of our day today and bless us and do the miracles and give us the eyes of faith if difficulties come, not believing that things are falling apart, going to custard, but that actually God has a plan and a purpose, and out of that difficulty, maybe an even greater blessing that we could have envisioned will take place. So let's take just a few minutes to pray.